When life gets harder, you get smarter. You don't mission, you level up like a boss. Connect Vox Fibre to your home, starting from 554 Rand per month. Level up your experience with Airtime's Wi-Fi boosters, Vobi Voice app calling, Office 365, and over 160 other products to enhance your lifestyle. Live smart. Level up with Vox. Visit vox.co.za to view our range. T's and C's apply.
I'm Duncan McLeod, and this is the Tech Central podcast. Do join us for our YouTube live streams. Search on YouTube for Tech Central, one word, and hit the subscribe button and the bell icon to be alerted whenever we go live. I'm pleased now to be joined on a live video call with Nico Steyn, the co-founder and CEO of IoT.next, the company which has just sold a majority stake to Vodacom Group. Nico, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Duncan. Lovely to be here.
So before we talk about the Vodacom deal and how it happened, please take me a bit through your background. You were previously with Pinnacle Group in various roles, I think.
Yeah. So I did a brief stint, my only stint in corporate. Well, actually, very early on, I did a bit of a corporate thing. I was with Pinnacle. I think it was for about a four and a half year stint. Before that, I was in a business with some of my current partners, where we actually built software retail solutions. And so I sort of came through that from 96 to about 2006, took a bit of a break for about 2 years, then got involved in the hardware sector. It was going to be a six-month sort of just quick stint to help with something. And then that ended up being 4.5, almost 5 years. And it was really in that time that I saw an opportunity and moved out of Pinnacle. And really that project or that opportunity really spoke around integration services that we were going to do, software development, that type of thing. I really needed to get out of corporate, to be honest. And so that sort of gave us an opportunity to start something. But in that process, we actually then realized, listen, here's a massive opportunity in terms of there's a big gap in the market. And towards the end of 2015, so I think I left Pinnacle in 2014, towards the end of 2015, we founded what is today IoT.next.
So who is we and how did this idea come about?
Well, it's really myself and my two original partners, Bertus Jacobs and Terry Moon. And then our founding funders, which was Talent 10. And how the opportunity or how the idea came about was in this project of integration. It was just going to be a normal integration project. It was quite a large sort of installation that had been done. Multiple types of technologies had already been purchased. So all the new stuff was there, and it was literally a case of trying to get all this stuff to intercommunicate and being able to interoperate. And in that process, we then realized, whoa, this is seriously difficult. Everybody that's out there that's telling us that they can do it actually can't. And if they do, they actually force you into a silo in terms of technology. And from that perspective, I thought, obviously, here's a massive opportunity. And in that process, we would have been developing some new technology. And, the rest is kind of history right now.
Yeah. So this is all around the Internet of Things, IoT, and integrating different technologies and then creating a platform to give business insight around the data that's being collected. Am I describing what the company does accurately? And perhaps you can expand on that a little bit.
Yeah. Let me explain that a little bit, because I think that is, everyone's talking about this journey of digitization, all this transformation that's taking place. And we can see that. I mean, we literally see businesses popping up, really disrupting our space. Essentially, from our perspective, what we were faced with initially, and it just turns out that it's actually a massive problem globally, was that never mind all the new technology that's coming into the market. What about all the old stuff? What about your legacy equipment? Mm-hmm. Not only that, what about these different types of equipment that aren't necessarily compatible with one another? And home automation is a fantastic example of how not to get it right, because if you've done anything in home automation, you get it right first time round. And when you want to add the new item or the new device, it's a problem. So, and then eventually over a period of time, nothing works, you know. So that really has been the segment in the market that we've looked to address. That's really been our play initially around our Raptor technology, our edge technology, being able to have a device or have a mechanism very close to the operational environment, being able to get all of these different multiple systems that are out there, get them actually into a single layer of data abstraction. So basically normalizing it, and I mean, to just make it simple, really being able to be almost the UN, that translation tool between all of these different nations speaking different languages, being able to bring them and bring that layer of data harmonization. And really from there, we then extended that up, obviously, into the cloud, really being able to visualize it, to bidirectionally communicate. So once we understand that potentially a door has opened, you know, we might maybe want to switch on the light, right? So how do we do that? And really just being able to bring that to bear.
So is the integration that you do, is it? I mean, we know there are different types of IoT networking technology around. There's SquidNet, but there are lots of others as well. Is the integration you do between those types of networks, or is it more integration into the back end of corporate systems to allow companies to accumulate different data points?
Yeah, so I think there's this misconception, right? So there's the network or the multiple networks that will carry the data. And then there's obviously the, you know, the actual devices that we have actually in the actual market. And from that perspective, what we're trying to do is bringing it all together and making it work, you know, harmoniously in one.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And you've got this Raptor device you've developed. This is a piece of hardware that plugs into a data center?
Yes. So basically what the Raptor does, it's hardware and software. And essentially what it's doing is it's sort of that first sort of connection point. So it's the device, it's physical and it's virtual. It can reside virtually as well. But essentially what it's doing is it's allowing us to connect into all of those devices. It's allowing us to actually abstract the data, make sense of the data, because what we're doing is we're creating massive amounts of data right now. Mm-hmm. And the issue and the challenge that everyone has is, first of all, converting that into information, but more importantly, taking that period of latency. So if you think about most businesses right now, they all know that they have a problem, but they find out about it a little bit too late. So being able to close that gap between where we have an issue and how we actually respond, and almost to start doing that proactively as opposed to reactively. And essentially what Raptor is doing, it's bringing all of that operational environment into one central point so that we can start controlling and managing and monitoring from there.
Right. And I'd imagine there's some complex work you've had to do to integrate this with companies' legacy systems.
Yeah, no. So, I mean, that obviously is the complexity. What we really have attempted to do and are attempting to do and spending a lot of time and money engineering that is to make it easier. So, you know, to take away the headache.
Right.
So every time, inevitably, you're getting into a digital project, people that have been involved in these types of projects, inevitably, you know, you'll be putting down a solution. And, you know, once you've deployed that, it's okay, but we need to add this. We need to bring this on board. We need to, we actually need some data from there. And that really is where the complexity sits. So our technology is really addressing that and making it scalable and easy to be able to make those changes in the ecosystem.
So, Nika, you've been expanding internationally. I think you established first an office in The Hague in the Netherlands, but more recently you've also expanded into the vast US market. Tell us about that and some of the projects you've been working on in those markets.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, it was a phased approach for us. What we wanted to first do is make sure that we could drink our own Kool-Aid, make sure that, and, you know, we often say that if your stuff works in Africa, it most probably will work anywhere else in the world. So really been focusing on that initially. So we really went into a very aggressive commercialization phase first quarter 2017. Mm-hmm. And initially we said, look, let's push into Europe because that's sort of the same timeline. And we'll, you know, and the US will happen a little bit later. And as it is, you know, the US came on. It just actually came on by itself. I actually met a guy on an airplane, and had a very short chat with him. And Francis will forgive me. He's an Australian guy. So when he started speaking Australian, you know, I couldn't understand because I don't really speak proper English. But anyway, so we had a good chat. I gave him my card. He didn't really know what I was doing. He was into energy management. And phoned me 3 days later. And like a couple of weeks later, the American guys, Danny Badrin from Minimize USA, was in my office. And we pretty much had put a deal together. So with the result that we've had some really great progress made in the U.S. We're involved in a project there in Florida State, in one of the counties, and a very disruptive model, not just from the technology perspective, but literally everything, from the finance model to the technology, really just very, very exciting. So, and a lot of interest. So we've opened up offices in the U.S. as well, and the guys are doing fantastically well. In fact, we've just had a guy, John Neville, who's joined us as chief commercial officer. Really a veteran in the industry. And when I say veteran, he's been around long. But when you look at him, you don't think he's been around that long. He's one of those guys. You know? So he looks younger than me, but way younger than me. But he's been involved in a lot of the big telcos. So really experienced campaigner. And Jason Bradley, who's our chief operating officer, who was the head of security for Fujitsu for the Americas. So we've got a really strong team that we're building in the US right now.
So do you remain a South African headquartered company? Obviously, the opportunity you see here is global. Is there an argument to be made that you move perhaps some of your head office functions to a place like the US? Do you continue to do your R&D here in South Africa? What's your thinking around that?
Yeah, so, I mean, as it stands right now, we are firmly rooted in South Africa. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that was part of our thinking in terms of if we were going to find a new partner, who would that partner be? We obviously had some offers offshore, but really felt very strongly, myself and Wayne Fitzjohn, the CEO of Talent 10, who are initial investors, felt very strongly about South Africa. You know, we have a passion for the country, passion for the people, feel that we need to make a difference. Mm-hmm. And from that perspective, you know, we're in a fortunate position where I believe we've built a really great product locally, but now obviously need to go and grow globally. But in terms of core development, core services, we're going to keep that in South Africa.
You've mentioned Talent 10 a couple of times. They were the initial, I don't know if I can call them venture capital providers or the seed funders. Who are they exactly?
So they're a fund that manages certain individuals' sort of savings and investments. So they're really a private equity firm. That's really what they do. They've got some investments into some other industries as well. They're not really venture capital, mm-hmm. although, so they said they're never going to do venture capital, they're never going to do IT, and then, I mean, we get to meet, and 15 minutes later, we have a deal. So, I mean, I have to give it to Wayne. He obviously threw away the rule book on that one, but it was a great opportunity for both of us, and I think it's working out well.
So are they a South African private equity firm?
Yeah, they're South African.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, big news that was announced last week at the Vodacom annual results presentation was that Vodacom has acquired a 51% stake in IoT.next. It's still subject to approval by the Competition Commission, and the value of the transaction has not been disclosed. How did this one come about, Nico?
So essentially what's happened is Vodacom... Yeah, you know, it was one of those. We had a meeting, really more business development type opportunity. Had a good chat with Shamil, and really didn't have an idea that, a feeling that we wanted to sell. Certainly not 51%. We were looking to potentially do a raise, because what we were seeing is we really want to leverage our environment and our technology, and we wanted to do that globally. So when we had the discussion with Shamil, it was really more to show him the tech, and he obviously really enjoyed what we were showing him, and at the same time said, well, Nico, we need to try and let's see if we can't do a transaction. And on that basis, you know, he ended up getting his 51%, which mm-hmm. is mm-hmm. good. But as that stands right now, you know, we're obviously very excited. I believe that Vodacom brings the dynamic that we require. So they're bringing capital injection into our business, but they also bring us huge global exposure. So a lot of business here locally, through Africa. I mean, Africa is going to be massive for digital transformation. A lot of projects that are taking off up in Africa. But certainly through the Vodafone Group, you know, massive reach into multinationals and larger customers.
I was going to ask how quickly you could potentially tap into the Vodafone opportunity.
Yeah, no, we're actively involved. Obviously, it's not one of these situations. We're a startup, right? So, you know, when you're in a startup, the guys will know out there, you always have this balance, this chicken and egg. You know, I need the people, but I need the business, that type of thing. And then you have something come along like this big red raindrop, and all of a sudden you've got to get your act together big time. So really the key now is for the next couple of months really to look how we tactically and strategically engage into the engine and become part of the fabric to make sure that, you know, we're actually delivering, that we're actually getting into the customer base and extracting the value that both of us, saw at the outset of the transaction.
Nico, I suppose there's always a risk when you're being acquired by a corporate behemoth like Vodacom that you'll be consumed by corporate red tape and management processes and all the rest of it. How do you avoid that trap?
Well, I think, you know, that was fundamentally one of the big discussion points before we even got to, you know, we're going to do a transaction. Really, the merits in terms of why we shouldn't. So I really pushed very hard in terms of telling, you know, explaining to Shamil that from our perspective, we don't feel we're ready. And even if we were to do a transaction, our biggest fear would be that we would take away the fact that, you know, our ability to be agile, to move quickly, to be able to adjust to market trends the way that we have been, and that's made us successful. Mm-hmm. And what was really encouraging, and I think one of the big turning points for me in the discussion, was when Shamil, you know, basically said from his perspective, you know, that's exactly what they're enjoying. They like what they see, not just in our technology, but in our capacity and capability to really be agile, to be able to disrupt. And so from that perspective, we're not changing that. You know, the team remains intact. The way that we manage and run the business and intact, as long as we do a good job of it, you know, there's no reason for anyone to come and tamper with that. So that has been, I believe, you know, if we change that, we would destroy value for ourselves and for Vodacom.
And management remains invested. You keep the IoT.next name. You keep your same offices. You're not moving into Vodacom in Midrand. So you're going to be run fairly autonomously, right?
100%. I mean, obviously, there'll be board oversight and you know, governance from that perspective. Sure. But, I mean, no different to my previous shareholders. So really, I think what this is, it's exactly that. Just, you know, we've got a much bigger field to play on right now.
Yeah. Now, I know you worked, and I see on your website that you work with other telecommunications operators in the South African market. I saw Cell C's logo, in fact, on your homepage. How will the acquisition by Vodacom affect those relationships?
We believe they shouldn't. We've had a discussion with a number of our customers already and assured them that there's no intention from our part or Vodacom's part to close shop on the basis that we only deal with Vodacom. Mm. So that's part of our deal with Vodacom. In fact, we, you know, contractually we've agreed that we will be able to continue to do that. And I think from Vodacom's perspective, you know, what they're saying is, and what Shamil said is, Nico, let's build great products for Vodacom and Vodacom's customers, but let's build a great product globally for other customers. I mean, this is such a massive market that really, you know, there's an opportunity, and we have a South African company here that we can invest in. So let's invest in you guys and let's see how we can take this market, this product, not just to Vodacom, but to the rest of telco and rest of the markets globally. So we have a very good relationship with Cell C and we will continue working with it.
Right. Now, I believe you've already been doing some work with Vodacom. I believe they've deployed your technology in their base stations to try and reduce their energy consumption. Is that right?
Yeah. So, I mean, we've done a fantastic, we're busy with a fantastic exercise over there. The initial results are showing massive, massive savings in terms of, you know, just utility and utility management in those base stations. And as you can imagine, you know, they have thousands of these base stations out there. So if you're able to, you know, pump up the efficiency by a couple of percentage points, you know, that ultimately, you know, is a big number. So I think there's just unbelievable. This product that we've developed for telco, I think, is literally arms, head and arms and shoulders above anything else in the marketplace. And I think from that perspective, really, really excited about the future in terms of that as a specific product, not just for Vodacom, but for anybody who has a base station that needs to be managed.
Nico, before I let you leave, you've got this fresh capital injection from Vodacom. I know numbers aren't being disclosed, but what do you plan to do with that money and what is next strategically for IoT.next?
Yeah, look, so I'll be leaving for the Bahamas. It's about a 12-month.
Does Shamil know this?
No, I haven't. I'll be letting him. I'll let him know later. So obviously a lot of people have asked us that. Really where I sit on this thing is the work's just started. I am so passionate about what we have and have built. And from that perspective, I really want to give it the legs that it requires. I believe this transaction helps us to achieve exactly that. So we're doubling and tripling down on what we've already been doing. Mm-hmm. Really going to be driving. And I mean, this space is interesting. So watch it.
Good stuff. Well, it was good to chat to you. Nico Steyn is co-founder and CEO of IoT.next. I'll be watching developments with great interest. And thank you so much for talking to Tech Central today.
Absolute pleasure. Thanks so much, Duncan.